Welcome to Parents' Perspective. From the era of cheaper by the dozen to the modern incarnation of the only child, American families have fluctuated in size for a variety of factors. Today, we'll explore the ways a family size affects its children. I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlitz. Our guests are Ruth Goldman, a clinical social worker specializing in family counseling and a mother of three. Welcome, Ruth.
Hello, nice to be here.
Christine Tantasunthorne is the mother of five, ages 11 to 25, and a social worker specializing in hospice care. Thanks for being here, Christine.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Bill Sansone is an architect and father of Alex, age 11. We're glad to have you with us, Bill.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Christine, we'll start with you, with your five children. We want to hear a little bit about how your daily schedule worked when your children were all home and all in need of your guidance.
Well, early on, I felt it was important to be together for breakfast and dinner in the evening. So we always had a fairly set time for those two meals. Scheduling was planned around the meals, getting the children up in the morning, getting them dressed and down to breakfast. In the evening, it was a matter of rounding them up from their various activities, seeing that they did their chores in preparation for dinner, and being there all together twice a day.
And what happened with schoolwork and projects and things that each of them had to do? How did that fit into the day?
Well, that was always a challenge because my husband's hours are long. And
what does your husband do?
He's a pediatrician, and but he kind of fell into place, and he got home regularly at about 7. So they would have to start their schoolwork usually, get a little of it done before dinner, and then there were usually a couple of hours after dinner to catch up on the rest of it.
What about if somebody had a play rehearsal that ran over into things? Did you have any problems with people not making it home for dinner?
Sometimes that happened. We tried to ask the children to make that a rare situation, but it did happen. And sometimes we got flexible with dinner and moved it back a bit, or moved it up to accommodate the children who had projects outside the home.
Now, what about your household schedule, Bill? I know it's a little different with only one.
Yeah, it's very different with only one child in the house. We have a household similar to Christine's in that breakfast and dinner together is an important part of our daily structure. But for the most part, I'd say we structure around Alex's school schedule and his school activities, and that has been the one element that we've been able to, keep us going during the normal week. But the other thing is that 2 years ago, I moved my practice into a home office, and with a home office practice, and my wife works with Montgomery County Schools, it gives us some flexibility in our time to be able to accommodate Alex's schedule and the other things that we like to do.
What happens with things like lessons, activities, summer programs?
Well, this summer my son's going away to camp for a month, so that certainly frees up a lot of that type of scheduling for Carol and myself. We're very careful and try to be very consistent about making sure that we all know what each other's activities are, like piano lessons and karate lessons and Sunday school and things like that. And we try to integrate each other's activities into our own schedules. And it's really a communications issue, I think, a lot of times. And it works very well. My wife is, again, the queen of lists and time management. So she's the one who really is the hub for us all.
Christine, do you have stuff to add to that? Because I know summertime is very different, and special activities can take a totally different tack.
Well, we also try very hard to balance loose, unstructured time for the children with some activities, some enriching activities. It's quite a challenge because there are, temperaments that need to be busy all the time, and there are certain members of the family who take to relaxing extremely well. It's hard to get them moving on their activities. But basically, you know, we come February, we sit down and plan, you know, who's going to be doing what week and how they're going to get there, et cetera. And so far, it's always worked out reasonably well.
How do you balance appropriate amounts of time for each child, one-on-one, or do you?
Well, because of our school situation, none of my children have gone to a school where there was bus service. So I've spent a good deal of time carpooling. And I've heard from other parents as well that time in the car alone with a child is a really good time to talk to them. I think it's because you're not looking at them directly.
And vice versa.
And there's something soothing about driving along. And I've always found that a really good time to talk to them, you know, to just have that individual time with them. My husband, on the other hand, he's done his share of driving, but because of his schedule, he's actually had to make appointments sometimes to spend a little time with them. He'll take them out on his half day. He'll make a date and take one of them out to lunch.
Well, that's an interesting point, though, making an appointment with your child to be together.
Yes. It seems to be kind of what works best for him because of his schedule. Another thing is that I had kind of forgotten, but my elder daughter is home with us for a while, and she reminded me that when the three oldest were very small, I used to take them out of school a half a day once in a great while and take them to lunch and let them pick out something that they wanted to do.
Some parents would be afraid to do that.
Well, I said maybe I shouldn't mention that. That's probably illegal.
When they were very young. It was okay.
How do you find grown-up time? How do you balance child-oriented time with one-on-one time with each other?
When we're going out socially with other adults and friends, if it's not appropriate for him to come along, he doesn't. But he seems comfortable with it, and we're comfortable with it. So it hasn't been that kind of division.
No, it's clear. Yeah. If you're comfortable, that's
And the other thing, too, is a lot of things that are considered kids' activities are just a lot of fun to do, so we want to be a part of it as well.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
so
great. You can play too.
Exactly. You know, I mean, whether it's going out and finding a place to play laser tag or something like that. I mean, it's fun to be a kid once in a while.
My husband's coming with you. He's right. Really. Christine, what about you? I guess it's a little different when you have more children around.
Well, I have to think back to when the older children were small. I was unusually fortunate in having relatives in the area who would come and stay all too willingly. You know, one was my mother, and she loved to spend time with the children. So we had that time for ourselves. As they got older, the older children stepped in and took care of the younger ones, which, you know, my husband and I greatly appreciate. In fact, even now, they'll say, you know, whenever you and Dad would like to go away for a weekend, one of us can come home and stay with our youngest. Doesn't need a lot of supervision anymore. But
I wondered about that with when you have more children, if that works out that way.
It does. Yeah. It's really very pleasant to see them, you know, take over, and some of their friends have come and stayed with the two that are at home right now. Still need an adult around just to kind of, you know, make sure things are going along okay. And some of our older children's friends have come and spent the weekend with them.
Ruth, we were going to ask you, and so this is an appropriate time to bring it in, to talk a little bit about extended family, how you see extended family being supportive, and does family size seem to make a difference?
Well, I think extended family is like everything else. If it's good, it's great, and if it's not, it's not. If people have extended family who are warm and accepting and want to participate and are around to do so, it's wonderful. And certainly it increases the number of good relationships that children have.
Do you see a lot of families depending on or having those kinds of relationships with extended family today?
Probably less so than in the past. That's because of how spread out people are.
Yeah. What has been your experience with the kinds of time parents spend with their children? That's a totally different tack here.
Well,
is the length of time significant, you feel?
I think the amount of time is very significant, but it's not significant, it's not positive, if it's time in which they are just condemned, in which parents are condemned to be with their children.
Babysitting time.
Right. As in, dad is babysitting for his son.
Right.
Length of time is only really counts if it's time in which there is something significant taking place in the relationship, in which people are talking, listening, interacting, just being with each other in a way that is good. But length of time in itself, I don't think is means very much.
What would your advice be to parents who, where they have two careers and one, and they both get home at 6 o'clock at night?
Well, I would ask them first of all whether they really need the money.
Priorities.
I don't think there are substitutes. I know that there are many children who do incredibly well in spite of the fact that they've been raised by nannies and all kinds of people, but my belief is that nobody really is as interested and focused on a child as a parent, and that there really is no substitute, and that we're talking now about parents who have a choice, I assume. We're not talking about mothers who have to work. Basically, we're talking about people who have the option.
Mothers or fathers.
Or fathers.
Are you talking about up to a certain age, school age, basically? Or what other kinds?
Well, I think that parents, that the amount of time that parents are physically present in the life of the children should be determined by the needs of the children, ideally. Mm-hmm.
So it's not age-related as much as it is child-related?
It's child-related. Of course, it is somewhat age-related because children, as children get older and have more of their own lives apart from parents, parents have more lives apart from their children.
Bill, how have you been able to provide Alex the opportunity for sustained peer relationships? It's interesting to hear Christine talk about the relationships among her children, because even though they're not all the same age, that is kind of a peer relationship generation-wise. When you have a child growing up in a home where the other two people are full-fledged adults, how do you give him the opportunity to have peer relationships?
That's probably one of the greater challenges we have in our home. Unfortunately for Alex, while there are children in the neighborhood that he plays with, they're all in the same age range. They're not his close buddies. I mean, his close buddies really are the kids at school. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, given that he's in a school where the classes are fairly small, we know the parents, we know the kids very well, we're able to coordinate times when either one or two of the other kids come over to our house or Alex goes to theirs. So again, everything seems to focus around his relationships at school. And it's a constant challenge to make it possible for him to interact with other kids because, again, he spends so much time around adults, he sometimes forgets that he's 11 years old. And that can be embarrassing.
I just thought I would jump in on this one and, you know, to talk a little bit about
what some of the issues are for an only child.
There are things that I think of just in terms of my own experience growing up as one and how I've turned out because of it.
Wonderfully.
not just, which don't just relate to companionship, mm-hmm. As I'm sure you know, but relate to certain developmental tasks that are difficult to accomplish when you're an only child. And mm-hmm. those are, you know, things like teamwork, mm-hmm. sharing, figuring out how to get other input. There just are a lot of tasks that are really essential to kind of function in the world that one has to really work on, I think, as a parent of an only child. And that comes more naturally, as you were describing, Christine, your children. It sounds as though the older ones really got their early needs met very well and have warm, good feelings toward the younger ones. As a result, they weren't deprived as the younger ones came along.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so they seem to know how to work together and to how to give and how to get and give.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. My youngest child is, there's a large age gap between the fourth and the fifth. There's 5 years. So in some sense, he is like an only child. And I grew up an only child. So I find for the first time I have to draw on my experience as an only child to help one of my children. And the tasks you mention are exactly the ones that he needs help with that the other children didn't. Teamwork, and I still need help with those tasks myself.
We all each other.
We all do.
But I've seen with Alex, especially in the last 2 to 3 years, you know, we were very conscious about the fact that we wanted him growing up knowing how to share, how to relate to other people, and we're very fortunate in that Alex is an outgoing, very social child, very articulate. And so when the opportunities arise to be with other children, or grown-ups for that matter, he's forthcoming, and he will openly share, and he will go out of his way. And he's also somewhat sensitive. So if, for example, one of his teammates on the soccer team got injured or somehow, you know, was disappointed with a play or whatever, Alex was the first one to go over and, you know, pat the kid on the back and say, gee, are you okay? Or great home run, or you know, he knows that by showing those kinds of feelings and having those kinds of feelings for people, that it comes back to him in the sense of affection and friendship.
Do you ever have the problem of a kind of, how to put it, sort of a pseudo-maturity, you know, of an...
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I'm talking
yeah.
about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Alex will be sitting with us at the dinner table and we'll be engaged in what I would consider a grown-up conversation, and out of his mouth will come this insight that my wife and I look at each other and say, where'd this kid get this? I mean, it's incredible. And then other times she'll say something so totally inappropriate that we want to fall through the floor. But, I mean, that goes with the turf.
Does some of that relate to being a child who is around adults a lot, or is it...
I don't know if it's just that. I think that has a lot to do with it. But I also think it's the fact that he's just got a little more attention and interaction with us as grown-ups. Mm-hmm. We'd never really treated him like a baby. We never treated him like a small mm-hmm. child. We never talked down to him. And as a result, I think just his natural reaction and interaction one would associate with somebody more mature, more adult than somebody who's a child.
But it sounds like you're talking about respect. I mean, that there's kind of respect.
Absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely. And it goes back to the parents using every opportunity available to demonstrate and exercise those kinds of characteristics so that the child, perhaps without even knowing it, is seeing that kind of interaction.
They're learning from what they see, not what we say, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. In addition to coping skills, Christine, other skills we'd like our children to learn are those which help them become responsible people. What kinds of responsibilities do you or have you expected your children to undertake as they've been growing up?
Well, I try to have them take on responsibilities according to their age, beginning with preschool when they learn, you know, simple chores like setting the table, helping get ready for dinner. And then through the years, my husband also added in yard work, much to their regret.
And they did it?
Yes, they did. They all, except one who unfortunately has asthma, they have all done yard work. As they got a little older, they also have, when they were in high school, they each took paying jobs in the summer to try to help, you know, with some of the little luxuries they wanted and whatnot. Cooking, I also really felt strongly that each of them should learn to cook because that would free my husband and me up a little bit. If I did want to get to a PTA meeting, then I would be able to ask one of them to take over with the cooking.
That's wonderful to be able to do that. Bill, yeah. Any comments?
Oh yeah. Well, responsibility is one of those big words in our house that's at the top of the list in terms of understanding. Alex has been well tutored as in the ideas of responsibility from the time he was a small child. We have a lot of philosophical discussions as well as practical applications, so that whether it's walking the dog, doing the dishes, believe it or not, we have an 11-year-old son who does his own laundry now, thanks to Carol's strong influence and leadership. But I think Alex is growing up understanding that he's responsible for what he does and what he says and how he acts, that there are consequences to those actions and things that he does, and that responsibility simply means doing what you say you're going to do when you're going to do it, doing it to the best of your ability, and if something goes wrong along the way, don't look for somebody else to blame. Just say, I made a mistake, I messed up, I'm sorry, let me see what I can do to make it right. And not feel guilty, not feel failure, not feel that somehow he's let us down. That, okay, it's done, let's go on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm, let's go forward.
And you know, make it a learning experience.
Christine, have you any successful strategies for dealing with sibling rivalry? Is there anything that, I read a biography of Rose Kennedy in which she described putting her children in different closets, and sometimes two would land in the same closet. I doubt that you did that with your kids. What happened?
The sibling rivalry really threw me because I grew up an only child, and the constant fighting really overwhelmed me when they were little. And I must say I don't have any really great strategies. I tried to not get too involved until they reached the point where it seemed that they might hurt each other, and then I would send them to separate places to cool off.
not closets, we hope.
It was basically their rooms, except that ones that shared a room, I'd have to find another spot.
You had to go to the garage.
Each one of them had some turn sharing a room with another for however brief period of time, just so they'd have that experience of sharing. But it seemed that somewhere along the line, the sibling rivalry lessened and lessened. And it was very noticeable that as one child would reach adolescence, he or she would become kind of part of the group and be accepted by the one before. So now the older ones are all very good friends. There's still one little bit of sibling rivalry going on, but I'm hoping in the next few years that that'll resolve itself.
I was pretty despairing when my children were small. They were very close in age. And I thought that I had presented them with a gift, with gifts of each other, and that they should be eternally grateful to me for having produced a family for them. And they weren't happy with it. And often they were not too nice to each other. And I never knew what to do. I just went into a panic and thought of them as ungrateful wretches. And so when they were very young, I made an appointment with our pediatrician. We were living in Cambridge, Massachusetts at the time. And I made an appointment with him just to see him for myself, to find out what I could do to help myself in this situation. So I'm sitting in his office and I say, Dr. Sherry, I just don't know what to do. I have these three children and they don't seem to like each other very much and they get into fights all the time. And he said, oh, Mrs. Goldman, I'm so sorry. I can't help you with this. I'm an only child and I have five children. And whenever my children fight, I just leave the house. And the story, I knew it was apocryphal because It was the day that the lights went out on the entire eastern seaboard. I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember that.
Sure.
But I was sitting there, and that's when the power failure, the big power failure came. And I just remember thinking that this, my life was not going to be easy.
We'd like to thank Ruth Goldman for her views as both a social worker and a parent, and Christine Tanta Sunthorne and Bill Sansone for giving us a glimpse into their families.
This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share a parent's perspective.
If you would like to send suggestions, comments, or questions, you can email us at parentspur@aol.com. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt. Thank you.